This is Real Talk, the Customer Insights Show with Jen Vogel, a top-rated live stream and podcast in the market research and insights industry. We stream live on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can listen on all major podcast channels. Join Jen and her guests for a weekly discussion around topics that will help you understand your customers better. Real Talk is presented to you by Vox PopMe, the leader in video research and ranked number one in qualitative research by Grit 2 years running. Here's today's conversation.
Hello, insights professionals, marketers, and everyone who wants to understand their customers better. I'm Jen Vogel, and today I want to discuss how we can track a brand's health and what that even means. So to discuss the topic, I'm joined by Jay Lister, Global Consumer Insights Director at Reebok. At Reebok, she leads a team of researchers to provide actionable insights and champions a people-first approach for the brand. You know we love that. So welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So good to have you. Really excited to chat today. I hope you've had a nice weekend and are having a great Monday so far.
Yeah. Mondays, you know.
Exactly. Well, this is a good way for me to kick off the week for sure. Really excited to have this chat. And just to get us started, maybe you could tell us a bit about yourself and your experience in the insights industry.
Yeah, I'll ramble because I'm getting on a bit, I guess. So there's been some experience, but I would say I really fell into the insights space by accident. When I graduated from my master's, I was hell-bent on moving to London. I'm originally from the UK. And my cousin said, no problem, you can sleep on my floor while you figure out what job you're going to do. And I signed up with a recruitment agency who got me some work experience, free work, with a company called dunnhumby, who I'd never heard of. But it transpired was huge and still is in the space of insights and loyalty programs and using data to make decisions. And the longer I was there, the more logical it was for me to have a career in the insights space. I started out working in actually account management with a non-traditional client for dunnhumby that was Shell, the oil company. And in there, I learned the ins and outs of targeted media, how to, measure the impact of campaigns, and quite a lot around comms planning. So I've really taken that with me, actually, through to today. I did also spend some time in dunnhumby's more typical practice, working with grocery retailers to mine their data and help brands and vendors better provide the right products to store, think about where to put them in store, and what types of media to engage with to keep people loyal to those products. I left dunnhumby for a hot second and went to a company called Ogilvy One to work in advertising because I thought I wanted to be more creative. Turns out I didn't love the culture there, so I went quickly back to dunnhumby, but actually went to work for them in Toronto, Canada, to work with another grocery retailer. And from there, I realized I was super curious about becoming more specialist, not just in insights, but in loyalty programs and building out value propositions. And that took me to Mexico City, where I worked on what dunnhumby called a discovery project to prove the case for data-led decision-making, essentially, with a department store there. And I spent 10 fabulous months there before the project ended. I moved back to London. I thought, I'm loving this international experience. What else can I do? And that's when an opportunity opened up with the Adidas group that took me out to Germany to work on their loyalty proposition that's now called Creators Club. After about a year there, I thought, I want to do something else. I would love to go to the States. And I found a role in insights in the US running team. I'm not a runner. I think that actually really helped. Very quickly, I moved out to the States, and I've been here ever since, working for Adidas Group, and most recently moved to Reebok to lead the global consumer insights team out of Boston. So I greet you from a very chilly Boston today.
I am in awe. Such a vast experience in different types of insights. I mean, dunnhumby is the shopper insights what a place to land accidentally.
Yeah.
And then to just have the opportunity to get all these different experiences in all different countries and cultures. Cause I mean, to lead a global role, I bet you that global experience that you have is really fed into that quite nicely.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, while I was at Adidas in the running team, I was very North America focused. Mm-hmm. And I realized throughout that, actually, I really miss the internationalness of it all. And how can I get back closer to that? And so Reebok afforded that opportunity. But yeah, I think, you know, insights at the crux of it, it's about empathy. And I think if you've lived, whether you've lived abroad or not, there's ways to find that. And I think seeking out diversity of thinking and cultures and background and that kind of thing is the way to do that. But you need to be choosing to be curious in that space. And I guess I have my mum to blame for that, because she was always like, when I was growing up, off you go, you know, go do study abroad and that kind of thing. And so that just kind of became, you know, part and parcel of who I am. And I'm sure who met many insights leads or anyone working in insights is today.
Yeah. I mean, I hear all the time people talk about like sort of getting into insights accidentally, just like you have, and that curiosity being really at the core of it, and people coming from all different backgrounds of psychology and, you know, mathematics and whatever, but just the thread that I hear across mm-hmm. all insights professionals is like curiosity, trying to learn something new, dig a little deeper, that empathy. I love hearing that people are like, you know, more insights professionals are being people first and thinking about their consumers or people in general. And, but that seems to be a really common thread.
Definitely. And it was definitely, I think, you know, at the heart of, and one of the values of dunnhumby. And I think dunnhumby has shaped me so much, in my career, you know, first proper job out of university. Yeah, it's so much part of it. And I think if you stay curious, then, you know, you're bettering yourself and your company, whoever you're working for along the way. But I think the hardest part is finding the balance between being so curious about the consumer and wanting to, you know, put their voice into the heart of everything, but also manage those commercial and business metrics too. I will say dunnhumby, just have them on a pedestal for 5 minutes more, really made me less afraid of maths or math. Growing up, I was really bad at math. I probably shouldn't say that now. But I was, and I don't have a degree in maths. I have 2 degrees in marketing. I thought I was going to do a PhD, but I realized I was an impoverished student and I was tired of that. But being at dunnhumby, I really saw like the power of what the numbers could do, and also kind of took the pressure off myself of being like the hardcore analyst that needed to come up with the numbers. I was more the person that needed to use them, tell a story with them, and then try and enact a change with them.
Yeah, I love that. It's yeah, there's calculators for math now. You don't have to do the numbers yourself, but yeah. You know, making it actionable, that is the key mm-hmm. in the insights, right? And telling a story. Yeah. I love that. Exactly. So when it comes to tracking brand health, you know, how do you define that?
Well, when you say tracking, I instantly think, you know, metrics that you've agreed upon that reflect, you know, the performance or health of your brand. And I think the agreed upon piece is really crucial there, because companies, I think, are definitely guilty of tracking everything just because it's measurable or trackable. But I think, and I had some great advice chatting with a guy I know at Mondelez last week, not Nick Graham, who you had on before, but their head of advertising, that was the number one thing to agree on between teams is that you're aligned with how brands grow and therefore what you measure as a result. And I think that's reflected in tracking. I know, you know, at Reebok, we have a big old brand tracker, lots of metrics in it. But how do we find the ones that are the ones that really reflect the health of the brand, which for me it talks about things like, you know, are people really picking up what you're putting down? Are they feeling some type of way about you? Hopefully that's good. Are you, you know, when people think of your category, are you the ones that are top of mind, which is all of that stuff is easier said than done today when there's so much competition, especially in, you know, a space like athleisure, fashion, apparel, that kind of thing.
Sure. And I mean, with brand metrics, like, I think it's one, there's certain metrics that you can track that are very mathematical, right? Very black and white, like, you know, people are visiting the site or they're not, or people are buying or they're not. But it's very difficult to come up with that, like, million-dollar brand tracking metric. Like, what is that one metric that you can, like, really agree upon, or does it change all the time?
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say I'm still learning a bit about this. So, you know, I haven't been doing brand tracking my entire career. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's about separating out the short term and the long term ones, and they all matter. Mm-hmm. And I think long term, we're all here as custodians of a brand or guardians of a brand to make sure that for the long term, the brand sticks around. So something like a brand equity score or a brand power score, I think, is really important. But that achieving whatever score you want in that space takes time, commitment, and consistency. And I think just given the pressures of, you know, especially in the last 2 years, business pressures to meet sales numbers and such, it's that commitment is hard and takes courage from leaders and everyone to collectively to hold hands to put the right things in place to make sure that your brand is consistent and you're investing in it consistently over time.
And even more important that, as you mentioned, the you've agreed upon these metrics. So, you know, the long-term stuff is, you know, you can go back and say, we agreed, we're going to be looking at this. Maybe it's, you know, not quite where, you know, this other thing isn't quite where we want it to be, but remember when we agreed on that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, in companies that have some sort of bonus at the end of the year, if that KPI is front and center near that bonus, then it is that you manage what you measure kind of moment. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I'm always encouraging and will always encourage wherever I am, you know, to have those, the brand metric alongside the sales metric, because you can't have one without the other, especially in an industry like the one I'm in, where it's about, you know, image and emotion and helping people craft their identity. It's not just about, you know, shoes on feet,
right,
or goes on chests.
Right. Absolutely. And so I want to talk about that too for a second, but before I do, you know, who do you think, like, needs to agree upon those metrics? Cause right, there's probably a lot of different stakeholders that could get involved, but who really needs to be, like, in that group that says this is the metric that matters in this case?
Yeah, I think, I mean, at the very top, the CMO, and then down from there, we're talking, like, at least the teams I work with, that I want the brand strategy team to be on the same page as my team, to be on the same page as our in-house advertising agency, because we all have, you know, a finger in that brand creation and custodian pie. Terrible analogy, but you get the point. Over time, so they're definitely in there. And then, you know, if I think C-suite and you know, senior leadership teams, if I would hope that, you know, the CFO is on the same page as the CMO and that kind of thing. So I think it's really it should be as high up as possible.
Amazing. Thank you. That's super helpful. I think, you know, it's, I always say, like, with any initiative, as long as we agree what success looks like at the end and when that end is, because as you mentioned, there's going to be short and long-term goals, like, then we can all move forward in the same direction. But when you say all or agreed upon, like, there's hundreds of people, I'm sure, at Reebok that would love to, you know, have a say, but there's definitely, like, a core group that need to be on the same page before, you know, otherwise, you know, you'll be going in different directions for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, some of the things we talked about, like, you know, that brand equity score, or even some of those, like, emotional, you know, driven KPIs and things like that. How do you go about tracking those in your overall brand health?
Yeah, we have your kind of typical survey, online survey that we send out in multiple countries. A set of the questions in there are standard so that with the provider that we work with, we can have benchmarks from outside of industry. And then a set of questions within there are customized according to Reebok. So things like, obviously not every brand is trying to put the same image perception out there. So we have ours tailored for us. We set that running ongoing everywhere and dip in and out of the data according to kind of what business question comes along or how long we know roughly it would take to move the needle. And then also considering, hey, are we actually doing any major brand investment right now? If we're not, we can't really expect the metrics to move much. If we are, okay, we can expect, you know, the comms awareness ones to move quicker. And so how are those looking? I think one thing we have a gap on, and that we'd love to include in the future, is that's obviously a survey is people responding and saying what they think and what they think they do. But using something like Google Share of Search will tell you what people are actually doing. Are they actually looking for you? So some sort of share of search metric to complement the survey piece, I think, is really helpful. As ever, multiple data points to help you craft an insight and then, you know, make that as compelling as possible to take an action.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's so many different data sources, right, to like layer on top of each other. So your ongoing survey data with your brand initiatives, with your, you know, purchase data, there's like probably so many things. Now, when this sort of like always on study that you're doing, is that primarily with customers, like known customers, or is it more general population in specific regions, as you mentioned?
We have, ours is tailored to or screened for people who are active in our category. So have shopped in the last 6 to 12 months, active apparel or footwear. That's probably very different to a CPG company that has a much higher turn frequency of purchase than we do. And we track the fallout of our target consumer rather than trying to screen in for them. So, because we know they're kind of a smaller piece of that or a smaller proportion of that category shopper. So we will dig into the data into them a little less frequently than overall category shopper level.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, one thing I'm always curious about, like, you know, track any kind of brand tracking, whether it's a brand tracking survey or just brand tracking initiatives in general, are there's so many kind of new methodologies that are always coming, you know, coming about. But brand tracking in general seems to stay like, you know, this, it can't be changed, right? You even mentioned there's standard questions. We've got to be able to track them against the norms or the benchmarks. And, you know, how do you see the tracking of brand health evolving with those kind of new methodologies and opportunities that are available to insights professionals now?
Yeah, I think some of the standardization should stay just so you can track kind of trends over time. But I think, with chatting with fellow insights leads, I think it has to get quicker. So in any way that technology or data can enable speed and then speed to action, crucially. Almost with this idea, and maybe people will disagree with me, but of if we can get 60% of the way there, with, you know, a pared back form of tracking, we can save money and then act more swiftly because these trackers don't come cheap. And then I think there's a big piece around sentiment. Obviously, there's a lot more AI and social analytics and all that kind of stuff at our disposal at the minute to analyze what people think and feel about us as brands. So I think that's a space that will be helpful to kind of connect the dots in terms of, you know, what someone says in a survey versus what they're saying on their social media or, a brand post or something like that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's the challenge. All the different data sources and things at your fingertips.
Yeah.
You guys are challenged with pulling together.
Yeah. I do think sometimes, though, like the allure of AI and that kind of thing is depending on the tool, it kind of is more exciting than it nets out. Mm-hmm. So I'm sometimes, you know, a little more cautious or scrutinizing the AI tool, depending what it is. When it comes my way, because like you say, there's tons of things popping up all the time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you've got to be able to screen out what's real versus what's buzzy, and you know, that's a challenge for sure. Now, I've seen you talk in other forums about like some of the purpose-driven initiatives that are important to the Reebok brand. Like, could you, you know, talk a little bit about that and maybe some of the KPIs that you're using to track against those?
Yeah. I mean, I think purpose is so important. I just kind of kick that off. And that doesn't have to be social purpose, right? I think a company needs to, you know, put out there what they really mean to do, and what, if that's for the social good, great. And if that's for purely for profit, then also fine. You know, so long as it's clear to you and your employees what you're there to do, I think, you know, that's what's important. So for us, you know, we are, I guess we've embarked on a new strategy as of a year ago, give or take. And we're all about advocating for human movement and human rights for all, not some. And so the way that comes across for me in the brand tracking work is, just to get really specific, is in the image perception factors that we track. So we look at things like, you know, are we a brand for all? Are we inviting, you know, everybody in? Are we promoting and inspiring and encouraging people to move from a fitness or an active in their community perspective? So that's the main way that we look at it. But I would say as an insights team, we hold that, and I'm encouraged my team to do that since I've joined. We hold that, like, why are we here? What are we meant to do? Really front and center in all of the work we do, so that we can provide a jumping off point in terms of recommendations for how to action what we found, whether that's from a product standpoint and how we think it could be marketed, or whether that's from a bigger brand initiative or path to purchase study perspective. Like, if we're here to really do this at the crux of it, then why don't we go this direction, or why don't we invest in this partnership to really amplify and win, I hate that term, but win this moment in the path to purchase, to make sure that we're top of mind. So it's bigger than just brand tracking for me, but it's about how do we really keep that front and center. And then, you know, remind others, because sometimes we forget that this is how we're here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that reminder is important, you know, any vision work or, you know, purpose work for any business, mm-hmm. like just a reminder, this is what we're all working towards. You know, everything you do has got to be thinking about how it rolls up into this bigger, broader initiative. Always needs a bit of a reminder. But you mentioned, you know, some of the initiatives that you're trying to influence or drive with the data. Like, when you're with brand health work, once you know kind of where you're at, level set, right? Mm-hmm. How do you turn that into those actionable insights that you can make decisions with? Like, what's your process that you follow there?
Storytelling is my team.
Is that all?
I mean, it's about, look, I don't tolerate, if I can use that word, like a PowerPoint presentation with 101 charts and everything in it. I like a single line headline and a visual that represents what the messages we're trying to get across. So it's about the craft in connecting the dots, the data dots that you have. And that's not just what's in the tracker, but again, you know, like we talked about before, it could be sales info, if we can look at Google search and that kind of thing, to really distill down what are the one or two things that we should be focusing on, and who that's relevant for. And oftentimes with the brand piece, it's, you know, we're holding hands with the brand strategy team to say, they're not picking up what you're putting down, or they're not there yet, or you're doing well on this, but you could improve that. And you know, a word that wraps that sort of thing up is called distinctiveness. If we're not distinctive in a really competitive market, then we've got a problem, because people can quickly overlook us and go to someone else to fulfill their need. And so distinctiveness doesn't just live with the brand strategy team, it lives with the marketing team. How do we make sure that we're, through our marketing, being really consistent and identifiable, and our brand codes and other buzzwords are really working hard for us for the long term? And then that also leads us to our in-house agency. So we're in the process at the minute of setting up new testing for creative that says, you know, answers the question, does it feel like Reebok? And if it does, hopefully land that distinctiveness, because it shouldn't feel like another brand. So one insight can kind of have legs. And I guess I also don't think that there should be like 1,001 insights in every presentation. So especially with brand tracking, I feel like a lot of the stuff that we find at the minute is more related to kind of that strategic piece, especially as we're embarking on a new strategy. So I think about insights as kind of strategic and then a little more tactical.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I mean, you make it sound simple, but it's not really easy to execute. I mean, like, I think a lot of insights folks struggle with distilling down that, you know, like you described, 101 slides in a PowerPoint with all the insights that came out of that study, which nobody has the time or energy to digest. Yeah. It's all important, right? And you certainly care about it, but to take that into a story of a single slide, a headline, here's what we found and here's what we need to do.
Yeah.
That's a really difficult skill to practice, right? Like,
yeah, you're kind of like a bit of an editor too. I think you have to kind of sort the, like what's really important here, what needs to be prioritized. Also who's the audience, you know, it's unfortunate, but you know, doing big studies of brand tracking or path to purchase, you know, there's many different cuts of that for different audiences and senior execs versus the people doing the day to day. So, I think the other thing that has really helped me is just kind of this separating myself from being a researcher versus like a storyteller, an insights lead, a dot connector. Because researcher, you know, would keep me in a bucket of, for this particular study, I found these three things. Where a storyteller, an insider, and however you want to put it, puts me in this like, how do I connect that dot to where I know the brand wants to go, to what's happening in the industry, to, you know, this other qualitative piece we did about, you know, brand awareness in a previous study, and that kind of mix of things to get me to a clear kind of, you know, so what, now what? So that kind of framing piece is really important for me. And then I think that hopefully helps my team. You can have them on next and they can disagree around how they present their work. And hopefully it gives us license to be a little bit more provocative and a little more kind of, you know, partner in what do we do with it. Because you know, I don't know if you've read the latest kind of insights foresight work from Kantar that talks about insights 2030 and where we're going, and it is about unlocking imagination and being provocative and that kind of thing. So
I have not read that, but it sounds like something I'm interested in, so we're gonna track it down. I'm gonna read it. We'll put a link to it in the comments. But what you just said about like the, like distilling it down to the so what, now what, like as you were talking, I was thinking like my team, we talk about that all the time. Anything we're doing, so what? That headline you wrote, so what? You know, that study we did, whatever. But I love the now what, like what are you going to do with it, right? Like why do we care? And then what's going to happen from this? And your description of connecting the dots and thinking less about the research in a silo mm-hmm. and more about how it fits into a broader whole is, I think, so important and where researchers are so valuable, like yeah. to think bigger picture and not just about the data that's coming in and, you know, people who are thinking like you are. And I wonder if like your marketing education, marketing background really helps with that and sort of thinking, you know, about how to tell that story and frame that story, which is probably why so many successful researchers come from all these different backgrounds, right? But it's so important to really be thinking big picture as opposed to just, you know, I asked this question, here's the answer I got, and here's the pie chart to show you the data.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it varies by industry. Like I'll tell you, coming from CPG into sporting goods, sporting goods is not as advanced as CPG. I mean, the data sources are a bit different, and I don't know, maybe the product is more king in my world than it is maybe for, I don't know, a Unilever or Mondelez, in terms of kind of what are you in the business of. So I don't know, I think I feel like we're greener in the sporting goods space. And so the idea of kind of having insights as like front and center in the decision making makes sense as a provider of research, but you have to push, and I have been pushing harder to have us kind of, you know, in the bigger discussions, you know, with the senior leadership team around the future of the brand, in the same way that, you know, I think the head of insights at Unilever reports into the CEO or one down. I don't report to the CEO. He is, so it's different according to industry.
Yeah. I wonder too, if that has to do in some cases with the sales channel, right? Like CPG is exclusively pretty much selling through grocery yeah. retailers and things like that. Whereas a lot of you're certainly more omni-channel, right? There's a lot more direct mm-hmm. consumer work, and it's a bit more of a complicated process, I would imagine.
Yeah. It's different.
Yeah. And I think too, that this conversation has come up a lot about like, how can insights folks get a better seat at the table in some of those more strategic discussions. So I love to hear that you're like pushing more for that. I guess, what advice would you give to another insights leader who is trying to do the same thing?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I think it's about, you know, finding ways to make sure it's clear you have that point of view or can bring that point of view. It's almost like a perception modification piece or exercise. And I think that leads to how you interact with different leaders and what you understand about them and how they perceive you. I did a big exercise when I was in my previous role at Adidas, just kind of almost like auditing what the expectations are for insights, current perceptions, where we have gaps, and kind of invite the feedback and the kind of the vision that your stakeholders have, especially the higher ups, to then kind of leverage that to position and enable your team to realize some of those things and be invited into more discussions. And I think that definitely worked out. I think the other thing is where you have a company or leaders that are talking about consumer obsession and that kind of thing, that the insights team is a great conduit to unlock that as a culture where the behaviors really match what's being said at the top. And that's not just the responsibility of the insights team, but the insights team can really enable that with HR and sales and many different partners to make that really kind of a sticky part of the culture and not just words or, you know, insights of the voice of the consumer. Yeah, but, you know, we all really are trying to serve the same people here and have that empathy. So it's not all just a functional thing. It's a philosophical thing. And I like to think in that, what is the philosophy here to try and unlock how the business transforms over time? Oh, hello.
So sorry. We almost made it. He obviously, Henrik, obviously very big fan of that approach.
Thank you. One dog.
No, I mean, I think you like in a company that has that people first philosophy, you know, you do have a better opportunity to really be proactive and, you know, kind of take your seat at the table as opposed to waiting for internal, you know, as an insights department, you're serving so many different internal customers, right? Mm-hmm. And so instead of waiting for what they need, like being proactive and providing them with what they need or what they maybe didn't know they needed, yeah, you know, you'd start to earn that ear a bit.
Exactly. And I think if you're in a leadership position, it's about, and you have a strong vision, or if you don't, find one, figure one out, and then try and think about ways to kind of get people to think a little differently about your vision, how it can complement, contribute, and not necessarily challenge, but evolve what that means. Because insights especially, you know, there's so many benefits around, you know, if we're really good at insights, I think we can be really good at, like, you know, employee relations in terms of just having that empathy across the board, not just within, you know, how we think about consumers.
I think that's such a good point. And even like, as you're mentioning, like you tailor your storytelling to who the audience is, like understanding what your audience cares about, your internal audience, just as much as your external audience, is going to make the work you do that much more effective.
Yeah. Agreed.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show today. This has been a really great conversation. And we actually do have quite a bit of like insights folks from CPG on the show. And I think this is the first time we've talked to somebody on, you know, the more sports athleisure side of things. So it's really great to hear your perspective. Thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks everyone for listening in today. We will be back with another episode next week. I will be joined by Rob Volpe, who is launching a new book. So stay tuned. Thank you.